No, the pictures.
Oh,
I've
good,
never
good.
Seen
okay.
one myself.
Woo! I was going to say.
I almost shot
you know,
a guy,
too. I was shooting
and
him
for those
the other day.
I think we neglected to say, for those that don't know what a chupacabra is, it's the legendary goat sucker of Southern America and Mexico.
Yeah.
Just thought I'd throw that
yeah,
in.
Yeah, no, that's totally cool. Because when you study this for a while, you start to forget what they actually are, and it's very good to kind of bring
you
us
look
back
for,
to that.
You look for two fang marks on your dead livestock and no blood.
Right.
Hopefully none on your body.
Right.
And then you go, okay, there's...
But according to this rancher, it was caught eating chickens and berries. So I think that kind of rules it out as a chupacabra.
Well, it needed some dessert.
If it was, I had all that goat's blood. Now I'm in the mood for berries
but,
and chicken.
Well, yeah, you know.
I just shot it, too.
Hey, that thing's eating my chickens.
Yeah.
Boom!
Yeah. Well, I thought it was kind of weird that he shot it, killed it, and then buried it. And then maybe a couple of weeks later, then he started talking about it. And they actually had to go back and dig it up and exhume it for DNA testing.
Yeah, what would be the point of burying the thing?
Exactly, you know.
Why would you bury it? I mean, I'm sure he looked at the thing after he shot it and said, boy, that's pretty weird looking.
Uh-huh.
But,
but you know, in none of these stories has any DNA results come back.
Well,
they all mentioned...
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
Huh?
Go ahead, Elmo.
Oh, they all mentioned sending off DNA samples for examining, but none of them have any results that have come back. And, I mean, we're going on a year here.
Yeah, and that seems to be a common motif of a lot of this stuff, too, is that, you know, DNA generally don't lie. I mean, if it's some new strain or strand of DNA, that's gonna be pretty hardcore numbered proof right there that this is something, that, you know, definitely out of the norm as far as what we know is, like, goats or whatever, you know. Well, here, we have a new species of animal now. It's called the chupacabra. This is a new animal.
Yeah.
We finally proved it.
Yeah.
That's the proof right there.
But that ain't one. That ain't
it
what
don't look like what I found.
Described it as the chupacabra.
But it's definitely something weird looking.
Well, it's weird
oh,
looking,
yeah.
But, you know, so is...
Will. Icky Lee said that on the air. Anyways, move on.
I whispered. I don't think anybody can hear it at 24.
I didn't hear it. Say it again.
No,
I know. No. We will get sued for that one. No way. But, no, it's definitely something out of the ordinary. You know, going back for a second, though, if this is okay, guys, I thought about this weekend, too, a little bit.
The Chupacabra?
No.
Oh.
No, about New Orleans again.
Okay.
About New Orleans.
Well, did you happen to see just a couple weeks ago or something, wasn't the New Orleans was on the Ghost Hunters on Sci-Fi?
Mm-hmm.
They
oh,
went down
yeah,
there and they
that.
Like did something in New Orleans.
Okay,
I haven't seen the show, but I saw the previews.
Well, they went into this restaurant in the French Quarter, which is why I asked specifically about the French Quarter, by the way.
Uh-huh.
And yeah. They investigated it, but unfortunately, well, they were told that they were going to get access to the entire upper floors,
mm-hmm.
but then when they were trying to do their investigation, it ended up that there was a party, because, you know, the restaurant,
oh, yeah.
you can rent out the restaurant for parties, that sort of started with the main floor, and it was growing to such extremes that they took over part of the second floor, which, of course, will invalidate all... research. So,
well, gee, a party in New Orleans? Go figure.
Well, that's what I want to talk about for a second, because I thought about this for you know, the last few days I've been watching the news a little bit here and there, and it got me thinking for a second, and, you know, people are going to probably think I'm nuts for this, but I want, before I say anything about it, I want this day I'm coming from a completely objective standpoint. This is just something to think about, and I kind of talked about this weekend with the ladies from GLPR, too. New Orleans, we know, I'm ignorant because I've never been there, but this is where the Mardi Gras thing happens, right?
Oh, yeah,
this is where
the original Mardi Gras.
This is where some ladies go in to earn their beads, so to say, what I've heard of the story
right.
of earning their beads. I have a lot of friends that went down to Mardi Gras, they've been down to New Orleans, and, you know, they come back with these horror stories of just these, put your shirt down, Will. That was absolute. How could I think of looking at those two?
Throw him some beads and.
God, man, I wasn't asking for donations. I was
give him a shiny something and he'll be happy.
But I have, like I said, I have a lot of friends that have come back from New Orleans. And, what'd you say?
Nothing.
Oh, Doug is full of all kinds of piss and vinegar today. He is just angry.
Nothing.
But there's all these stories I've heard from my buddies about, yeah, you should have been there, Skies. I've been invited to go, and I'm like, it's too many people in one place for me. I can't deal with it. But I've heard all the stories when they come back, and they're just like one disgusting, filthy thing after another, which, you know, I find pretty interesting myself. But, you know, I know a lot of people look down on that. Objectively as possible.
Oh, my goodness.
Are we looking right now as we speak, are we looking at a modern-day Sodom and Gomorrah? That's a question I have.
Wow, okay.
That's a question I have. And, of course, last night I'm sitting at dinner with the ladies, and I'm like, ladies, I want you to think. Okay, Scott, we'll think. So they're thinking, right? And
what they said?
No, they actually said, Scott, would you shut up and just eat your salad? But, you know.
But that never happens.
Keep the things rolling here.
We keep trying that. And it never works, so,
Is Bonnie listening to this?
Yes, she is.
Oh, okay.
No, but I was thinking, I'm like, you know, are we looking at a modern-day Sodom and Gomorrah possibly here? Because we know...
Well, you know, that's a good point.
I'm not...
That's a really
Doug's
good point.
Shaking his head like, Scott, would you please shut up?
No. I like it.
If that's the case, Las Vegas is done for.
Well, yeah, they're next.
Oh, yeah.
They're next. They're
it's
sending
next.
Some... Yeah, they're going to send the bulldozer of heaven coming down and he's going to level the place, apparently. I don't know.
Well, you know, Vegas has the Hoover Dam.
Oh,
so,
yeah.
You know. I'm not going to jinx it by saying anything more, okay?
But no, we have this massive storm that comes through and levels
this whole
town. Don't
let the powers that be know about that. Yeah.
I mean, we're talking about since 9/11, this is the biggest catastrophe we've seen. This is huge.
Oh yeah.
Well, this is the largest natural catastrophe in the United States.
I think the death toll is going to be more than 9/11.
Possibly.
By far.
Very, very easily it could be. We've seen throughout the.
I don't know. That would have to be what, tens of thousands.
They were already talking about over 10,000.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Go ahead, Elmo.
That's a good point, Scott, because, you know, a lot of people don't know the background on Mardi Gras, but I believe, doesn't it celebrate the beginning of Lent? Isn't it your 2 weeks before Lent starts, so you have a big blowout of sin before you go on the wagon?
Yeah, before, yeah. Exactly. That's a good way of. It's funny. That's a good way of putting it. That's a good way of putting it. That really is what the basis of it is.
See, I've worked with people from New Orleans in the past, and they've told me that the locals there, the Creoles, take Mardi Gras, Lent, and all that very seriously.
Uh-huh.
It's like a religious holiday almost, and the Creoles, the locals, know not to come out on the big night, the night of the grand parade,
because
that is really the night of wickedness, sin, and evil.
Well,
you know, it's,
I've seen the videotapes. I've seen girls going wild, you know?
Oh, yeah.
This is insane.
Oh, yeah.
It's
but
insane.
See, I've heard stories. I don't know what they're called, and I really need to brush up on this history, but there's some local voodoo people, for lack of a better term, that actually dress up and put face paint on and beat drums, and they march through the streets that big night. And if you're in their way, they will club you or something.
Really?
You know, I've heard all kinds of weird stories.
Well, it's just something I thought, because, I mean, we all know what, you know, when you say the word New Orleans, of course, you know, people like us are going, hey, ghosts, cool. But there is the other side of it where we go, there's a lot of partying, a lot of hardcore partying that goes on now.
Yeah, I wonder how the Myrtle's Plantation survived. Because that's just outside of Baton Rouge.
Is it?
Well, I know Chubby Checkers? He survived.
Fats Domino?
Oh, okay. I get them mixed up all the time. There's a picture of him climbing in a boat.
Oh, he climbed in a boat?
Yeah, he decided he was going to stay and rescue him.
Okay, for those of you younger than me...
and me.
Chubby Checker has passed away. I mean, a long
time.
Is that why you shot the look of death over it?
And,
like,
but Fats Domino, he was... If I'm not mistaken, because I don't follow sports...
I found my thrill.
Right.
On Blueberry Hill.
Okay.
Yeah. That's the tune. That's his tune.
Okay.
I probably just destroyed it, but that's the tune. That's
Thank you.
I always get the two mixed up for some reason.
I don't know how I remember that. I saw one of those Time Life
commercials. Then I'm completely off base. But go ahead.
That's the tune. He's a blues tune. He was a blues artist, and that was his...
Well, anyway,
mm-hmm.
Okay.
Fats Domino did survive. He got in a boat.
Was
Evidently, he was flooded out.
Was it
they haven't heard from him since, though.
Was it a
really
like a National Guard boat or anything? Or
I don't know. He might be
like
here in Houston.
He's not.
You know, he comes to Galveston every year and plays the Mardi Gras there.
Oh, does he?
Yeah, Galveston does a little Mardi Gras too every year.
You know,
I say little.
The funniest thing, you know, just a side note on this. I remember a couple of years ago, and Doug can laugh about this because he knows where I work, you know, and stuff like that.
Uh-huh.
A few years ago, one of the groups that I work with decided to have a Mardi Gras party during Mardi Gras.
Oh.
So I come into, of course, I don't want anything to do with it because I hate everybody I work with. I hate everything, damn it. I come into work because I don't want anything to do with the party. I walk in, and there's all the women around the office wearing beads around there, you know, wearing beads. And I really wanted to go up to one of them and go, these are all pretty conservative women. They're you know, they come to work, they go home. And I just really wanted to go to them and go, you know, I know you're having fun walking around the office with your beads on. You think it's festive and fun, but do you know what those beads really represent? And I didn't do that because I didn't want to lose my job. But that goes back to the point, though, that there is this element of really hardcore partying that went on down there. And by no means am I making any, I'm not making any conspiracy theories here. I'm not making any points. I don't really even stand behind 100% what I'm saying as far as this is concerned. But it's an idea that I've been
kind of
entertaining.
Well, you know, it's a good point. But honestly, you know, lately these past few years, New Orleans has been kind of tame. It's not the Babylon it used to be, you know.
Yeah. Well, and we look at the aftermath, though, too. And, of course, we've heard the reports, too, which has absolutely made me sick out of my mind. And you think at a time like this, and this is probably only a few people. That's the problem. There's probably only a few people that are involved with this. But at a time like this where all these people have lost pretty much everything they've owned, everything they do own, there are this small faction, and I've seen the videos. I know you've seen them, too, Will, where people have been just looting. There's been the looting aspect going on. From what I understand, the Astrodome, is that where these people have been camping out as, the Astrodome?
Oh, right.
Astrodome
is
in Houston. That's in Houston, yeah.
Superdome.
Louisiana. Yeah, Houston. That's
okay.
The Superdome is where they had a bunch of these people. God, I mean, somebody, who was I talking to, said, my God, Elmer said this. Not Elmo, but Elmer Havoc contacted me the other day. And he said, God, you got to look at these news reports, man. They're showing all these people in there, and it's just a sea. It's a sea. He's like, it's got to be hundreds of thousands of people just packed together in this thing. Of course, when you get that many people together, you're going to have other problems we've heard about.
Yeah.
I know a few women have been. There was a few women who were attacked. Unfortunately, you'd
think
at a time like this there would be a little more camaraderie. Let's try to get through this thing and try to help each other out. And I'm sure, like I said, there's only a few people involved with this. I'm sure that the whole group is doing this. But it's a pretty sick thing to see that.
This is a pretty emotional time for everyone down here. It's really kind of, you know, psychological what they're going through. They've lost everything, and now they're more or less being treated like cattle. You know, it's like, where do we have room to put you? You know?
Well, yeah, unfortunately, that's the only way that you can do it right now. There's just too many people.
Exactly.
I know here in Michigan, in Metal Creek, we're supposed to be taking a whole bunch of people.
Oh, boy.
A few hundred.
Yeah.
A few hundred to start.
You know, it's
anyway.
A whole state, an entire state underwater.
It's amazing.
It's just amazing.
It's a numbing thing that it's actually happened to, you know, you think it never would hit this close to home, even for us here. Now, I have to say, from what I understand, we got a little afterburner of Katrina also, but all it did here is it rained a little bit. We had to wash our cars again, that was it.
It didn't rain one bit here. I was so amazed. Usually when a hurricane hits New Orleans like that, I mean, we get rain and plenty of it, but it was sunny and dry here.
I know we got a little bit of rain here. We had a little bit of rain, and that was pretty much it. The worst thing that happened to us, our cars got dirty. That was it, more or less. But that's something I want people to think about, you know, and email your ideas over to us. Email your ideas over to Elmo, too, if you want, because he's a little closer to this than the rest of us are. I know it sounds crazy. I know it sounds weird. But it's something I think it's kind of important to think about, because I know the history of the city. I know what's went on there. And, yeah, it may have been tamed the last couple of years, like you said, Elmo. But, hey, this might be
You know, places like New Orleans were really founded on the voodoo culture, you know, the Creoles.
Uh-huh.
And if you really study up on voodoo and that stuff, it's kind of a hyper-Christianity.
Mm-hmm.
They believe in Christ. They believe in God. But they have a really, really primordial way of worship and expressing it. And, you know, not too many tourists see that side of Louisiana and New Orleans, but it's there. Yeah.
Well, there's always been this, you know, when you think of Louisiana as far as the attitude goes, and of course we do think about voodoo. That's a big part we hear. When you think of Louisiana, you think of voodoo. Oh, a voodoo doll.
Right.
I have a voodoo doll of Doug, as a matter of fact, that I poke on every single night. You know, when I, there's Doug. I'm going to just hit him with the razor some more and have some fun with it. But, you know, and people make fun. It's been the voodoo doll. The voodoo doll's been a part of, you know, pop culture for so long. I mean, people, you see it in TVs and movies and stuff like that. But when you think about when I think about, you know, the cult, the voodoo culture, the practices of this religion of some sorts, there's this, and this is based on, and I'm going to tell you guys, this is based on a lot of the music I've heard from Louisiana, the bands that come out of Louisiana. Some of these bands that come out of that state, they are evil. They are very twisted. And I'm not saying it's the whole state. No, I'm not stereotyping anybody. But some of these bands I've heard come out of Louisiana, oh, my God, these people are twisted. They're just evil. Where are you getting these ideas from?
Oh, man, here, too. Isn't that band, King's X, I think they're from Houston, aren't they?
Yes, they are.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, back in the 80s, there used to be some really severe rock clubs here. I mean, severe. I mean, there was one that I was afraid to go into. I mean, I actually walked up to the door and turned around and left.
We got 10 of those here in Detroit. I want to see that band really bad, but I don't want to die in the process. So I'm just
right.
But there is that. I'm sorry, go ahead, Elmo.
Oh, no, these clubs are always in the worst areas, you know, and they don't open until like 11 or 12 at night, and I shake thinking about it. Yeah.
But there's this whole idea right there. I mean, it's just something I wanted to throw out to people, get them thinking about that a little bit. It's something that, you know, I really, like I said before, I don't stand behind it too much. And when I've mentioned it to people, I've gotten that look like, yeah, okay, Scott, you're thinking way too much nowadays. Why don't you take a break?
Okay. Well, you know, if you look at the way things have gone, okay, 9/11 happened in New York. A lot of people consider New York a real, I don't want to say anything derogatory about it, but it's not the most desirable place in the world to a lot of people.
Well, it's an angry place to be. I've been there a couple of times.
Exactly. It's hostile. It's and there's a lot of negative energy there, I'll put it that way.
Absolutely.
And same with Louisiana. You know, if you've ever run into a Louisiana cop before, you'd know what I was talking about.
Well, what do those guys have to deal with?
Yeah, I know.
What do these poor guys have to deal with, you know, all the time? I can imagine how rough it would be on those guys, and you kind of would harden up around the edges after you'd dealt with that for a couple of years.
Exactly,
But it's that negative energy you're talking about. I understand completely.
Yeah.
It's all something for people to think about, though. I wanted to come back to that because I really wanted to get that out to people. Is there anything else happening, Elmo? Anything more to report?
No, honey, this weekend.
No, you were supposed to go out. I thought I heard a conversation.
Well, I got hooked up with one of the listeners from San Antonio, and we were supposed to go out this Saturday night and run down to Galveston, but he had something come up with his wife, and I came down with this head cold, so we postponed it till next weekend.
Okay.
But there is a few spots in Galveston I really want to check out. An old apartment complex that was the scene of a couple of suicides and a fire that killed a family.
Oh,
and
my God.
Just a long history of tragedies in this one spot. And also another location in the downtown area that was the scene of a fire that took about 8 lives.
Oh, my God.
Back in the 70s. So I'm thinking, you know, these ought to be pretty active places, I'd like to check them out.
Definitely. Keep us up on that, okay?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Get listeners, people are listening to the show right now. We talked about going to 3 hours, and this is one of the reasons that we want to talk to, you know, part of the posse now, the crew. We want to be able to get these guys on here and talk to them about these things and kind of give you guys an idea of what's going on over the country now. And this is kind of, just so you guys know, what'd you go to 3 hours for? Well, here's the reason. There you go. Now the cat's out of the bag. So it's very cool. Keep us up to date on this stuff, okay, Elmo?
I will, and there's always lots to talk about.
I know there is.
Excellent.
I know there is. Well, yes. We're going to hop off the line here, though, Elmo. We got to take care of a couple of things. We got to get ready for Pat Fatigue, who's coming on now, which is going to be very cool.
Oh, well, yeah. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Elmo. Thanks.
Thanks, Elmo.
Hey, get better, too, all right, man?
Oh, thank you. I'll try. I'll talk to you all soon.
Switch over to NyQuil now.
There you go.
Okay.
Have a good night.
Thanks.
Bye. Great guy. Great guy. Love the hell out of that guy. He's totally cool. Who's calling us now?
Let's bring him in.
Let's bring him in. Why not?
Nobody.
Nobody.
That didn't work out very well.
It's phone's teasing us.
It's angry.
Let's see if it rings
again.
Medicine
bag.
Let's see if it rings again.
Call back.
Okay. The entire last 10 minutes of this,
we're just gonna wait.
Segment is just gonna be us waiting.
All you hear is our breath.
As we wait to see if the phone rings again.
I know. You know. It's a weird idea, Doug.
I can't believe that there's that much bad in humanity anywhere, except for maybe the Middle East, that we have to have a modern-day disaster like that.
Oh, it's popping in. You're on Ghostly Talk.
It's Mrs. L.
Oh, God. Oh, hi, Mom.
Hi.
Mom L. Hi, Mom L.
Yes, Mom.
Well, I think that Chubby Checkered is not dead.
He's not?
No.
I thought he did.
Find out right now.
I thought he did pass on.
No.
Well, maybe I didn't get my...
I think that other Big Bopper you were talking about.
Big Bopper. That could be.
Chubby Checker is still alive.
He's alive. Okay.
The Big Bopper's still alive.
Ah.
The Big Bopper's still alive, too.
See how smart I am?
Who's the one who died in the airplane crash?
That was the Big Bopper.
That was the Big Bopper.
Then that's who I was thinking of.
Chubby Checker can still twist.
Oh, yes. That's all right. All right.
That's how I stayed so thin.
Awesome. Let's do the twist, then. There we go.
Do the twist. Well, I heard that, and I said, now I got to correct Doug on
that's
this.
That's not the one. Yeah, okay.
That's not the one.
Bopper.
That's not the one.
Okay.
What'd you look
like? I was going to say Doug.
I thought he had passed on like about...
No.
15 years ago, but...
We're talking about Chubby Checker.
I'm glad he's still alive and kicking.
Yeah, he's a big, tall guy, and he can still twist.
Well, as soon as he passes on, we'll have him on
Ghostly.
What is
he, like 137 or something?
He was born in 1941.
Oh,
I bet he's probably in his 60s.
He's in his 60s.
Yeah.
He's clearly in his
50s. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so he wasn't one of the unfortunates with the plane crashes and auto accidents. And blah, blah, blah.
No, that was the Big Bopper.
Because there's...
The Big Bopper, no, wait. There was a guy who was at the cruise this year, the Woodward cruise this year, who was... I was just talking about it last night, as a matter of fact, to somebody. He was one of those guys, one of those one-hit
one-hit wonder
guys.
Oh, yeah, like Chubby Checker.
Yeah. Well,
I don't know, but I know Chubby isn't dead.
I was, like, raving about the Big Bopper last night, and he's not dead, I don't think.
Yes, he is.
He's dead?
Yes, he is.
I got the wrong name.
He was in
the
Lewis and La Bamba.
He died with Richie Valens.
That's it.
Yes.
And that was in the plane crash, right?
Who's
is that Bonnie?
Okay. Yeah.
Bonnie.
She's smart like I am.
Yeah.
Yeah, like lame music. Exactly. Like,
but yeah, okay. Well, good. All
right.
Don't hit me.
I think I'll edit out that last segment.
I'm gonna be doing some serious reading on classic music today. I think.
Well,
I mean, I'm gonna figure this
stuff out. I just thought I'd tell you that and say hi, y'all.
Well, yes. Hi, Mama. Thank you so much.
Yeah, it's good to hear.
You don't want me to say that boo thing, do you?
You can say whatever you want.
Nah.
Oh,
you know what? The funniest thing is, there's people that are requesting that.
The boo bitch?
Yeah, that. There you go. There it is.
All right.
Boo bitch.
Watch the ratings go through the roof now.
Yes, they're
yeah, we're watching. We're say. Watching the numbers go up exponentially as you say that. Say it again, Mom.
Boo bitch.
There you go. Another 30,000 hits in 1 second. Oh,
wow.
My God. Look at us go. Oh,
man.
You mean because it's going to cost you money?
Yeah, pretty. Well, that's not $30,000.
No. That's a totally different class of word that causes that. Yeah.
Well, I'll hang up in case somebody else is trying to call.
Okay, all right. Mom. Thank you so much, Mom Al.
Thanks, Mom.
I just wanted to call and say hi.
Hi.
All right. I'll call you later, Mom.
Okay.
If you must, if right? You, yeah.
No. Don't sound too excited.
You're
going
to be bothering her, yeah.
Hey, it's my little boy on the phone. Let me answer the phone right away for him.
It's my baby. It's my baby.
Okay.
Okay. Have a good show, guys.
All right. Thank you. Bye.
I want to say hi, Will.
Hi.
I didn't hear him.
Say it again.
Hi, Mom L.
Hi there. I just wanted to make sure you got attention, too.
He craves attention.
He craves
it. Yeah.
All right, guys. Have a good show.
Thank you.
Bye-bye, Mom.
Bye.
Mom L.
That was just downright creepy.
So it was the Big Bopper, Richie Valens in the plane crash, blah, blah, blah.
The Big Bopper.
There were also many.
Who was I talking about? Oh, Sam the Sham. Sam the Sham.
Wow, that's went right
did
by
I
me.
Did I say the Big Bopper last? Julie, I think me and Julie were talking about that last night.
There's the also, didn't Patsy Cline die in a plane crash or a car accident or something? And there was just all kinds of them back then. So
yeah.
I guess the odds were with me, but I just picked the wrong guy to be dead.
All right. I'm very sorry to hear that.
But when he passes on, he's invited on Ghostly Talk. So there.
All right, a lot covered here. In about 5 minutes, we're going to be calling the Mr. Pat Fitzhugh to come on the show here and talk about the Bell Witch.
If he wants to now.
I hope he hasn't been listening to the last time.
Me too, yeah.
How do you guys think this extra hour has worked out so far?
I'm exhausted.
You're exhausted,
yeah,
too.
Yeah,
I think it'll be cool. We just got to get ourselves used to it again, get our endurance up, start eating Wheaties and stuff. I think, doing 3 hours is going to be cool. What's going on?
All right. Can I say it?
Yeah,
please?
Go ahead. What's
being said? What?
Havoc said your mom is cool. What happened to you?
But we'll talk about that later. This chat room thing needs to go. It's starting to get annoying.
You don't like the chat room? Yeah.
I don't want to hear your opinion.
Most
okay?
of the people in the chat room are the GT reporters.
Oh, are they?
Yeah.
Go away.
We have in the chat room, we've got Death Bones. Ghost Hunter, Will's in the chat room, Havoc, Kyle, Miss Teacher, which of course is Misty, P13, Sean B, Space Monk, Tim Yancey, and 8-Bit.
Oh, sounds like a sexy little bunch right there.
All the regulars. Gotta love them.
Yeah, they're all in the chat rooms. Of course, we're always in chat when we're on the air live.
On the air live, definitely. Yeah. Why don't we take another break here?
Good idea.
We blew right through that last break.
I know. I got to go and study up on IMDb. Who's dead, who's alive, et cetera, et cetera. So
we're going to be armed with that information for the next
I'm going to make absolutely sure that I... Thanks.
Thank you for blowing my eardrums
that
again.
that I know who's dead and who's alive.
Absolutely. Let's take a break here. Will, take us out here.
John Zappas from the Paranormal Research Center of New England. I hope you guys enjoy listening to Ghostly Talk. These guys are great. Have a lot of fun with them doing their show. And feel free to contact them if you ever need anything. And feel free to contact me if you ever need anything. Be willing to share experiences and talk about things. And like I said, listen to my buddies here at Ghostly Talk.
Looking for a break in a code. Deduce it, reduce it, dissolve it. Just try to resolve it. The best you can get is a mercurial hold. It's like plucking all the petals off a rose to find the still no secret is falling, just the pieces of a beautiful rose. It's gone now, you know, you can't make it. but what life it did hold is no longer within, just the remnants and the pieces of the whole. It's like moving through the labyrinth air, taking passage by passage with care. When you're sure that you've beat it, you find you're defeated. Back in the middle of a labyrinth snare. It's gone now, you know. You can't make it not so. You can put it back together again. But what life it did hold is no longer within, just the remnants and the pieces of the whole. All the living and the giving it imparts. Dissected, one side is divided. It just can't be decided if the whole is greater than the sum of its parts. Even though you can't see it, you know you believe it. The mystery of life is the whole. The whole is greater than the sum of its parts. Just listen to the hum of our hearts. Ooh, 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 ooh.
Sid Haig from www.sidhaig.com, and you are listening to the Ghostly Talk. And that's the only reason I don't have my boot up your ass.
I can always smell a graveyard.
Okay. Now you got it right. The energetic music brings us back to another segment. Oh, I know.
I mean, this is like new. We're working
on this. This is the first 3-hour Ghostly Talk.
Yeah, so. You know, usually this time we're just getting warmed up.
I mean, didn't we did like the anniversary show, we did a 3-hour, you know, and that I thought went on and on and on.
That
but
was,
now.
Well, yeah, that was
ridiculous.
Because it's like 800 people jumping on the mics and
right.
People turning tables over and then setting fire in the basement, and then, you know, it's just the usual things. That kills a whole lot of time, right?
Yeah,
now.
That was something.
You know, it isn't just sitting there in front of a mic talking. It's all kinds of other activities you have.
But this has been an awesome introduction to our 3-hour format,
yeah.
Because we had Elmo. For that hour, the last past hour.
I don't think we were expecting to have him on that long, but we just got in all this interesting conversation.
And it just happened.
Decided to go with it.
Right,
so.
And now, of course, coming on, we've got Pat Fitzhugh of the Bellwitch, Everything Bellwitch.
He is the Bellwitch guru. I've been referring to him like that since we had him on last time.
And I've mentioned him on many shows about different topics.
Yeah.
And that, you know, I admire this because he knows the subject. He studied it. He talked to, he went through the records. He really went through a lot of stuff to gain this knowledge and reclaim the knowledge from history and put it together. And that's what I admire. So I bring that up as an admirable quality about...
Well, it's something we can't do.
I can't do it.
We're jealous of people.
I am. And so for the next... do we have him for the whole...
Yeah, we're going to go... Yeah, we're
hour
go,
and a half?
Yeah.
Okay. Then we'll get to talk with Pat Fitzhugh for the next hour and a half.
About the Bell Witch. About all things Bell
Witch. And this is topical, too. I mean, it's a good time. Because, like you said... coming up is that movie, the new independent film.
And we're going to be, I mentioned that earlier.
Hopefully we'll talk about that.
Mm-hmm.
Why not?
Pat, welcome to the show.
Hey, how you doing?
Excellent. It's great to have you back. Thank you for coming on, spending some time with us again. We love having you on, like we did last time, talk about this, this certain topic, because it's very interesting. It hits close to home for me, because I have a lot of family in Tennessee, and it's a obviously, from discussions we've had before, this is probably one of the most notoriously violent cases of a haunting of some sort.
Well, with all kinds of phenomena.
Yeah,
it's not just. I mean, there's the disembodied voice. There's the poisoning. There's so many different effects to this phenomenon, and many many people experienced it. That's what makes it just phenomenal.
Mm-hmm. And what I'd like to do, if this is okay, Pat, is, we've had you on before, but to get it fresh in people's minds again, I mean, the few people that don't know what the story of the Bell Witch, we need to help you people out, but we'll take care of that later. I'd like to hear it again from you yourself. I mean, just a high level of what went down, because you know more about it than anybody. It'd be great to hear it from you.
Okay, well, the Bell Witch is a story of a pioneer family in Tennessee back in the very early 1800s who was haunted by this very strange and powerful unseen force. This thing first appeared to them as like strange-looking animals out in the fields, then later began rapping on the walls and windows, then came inside the house and would pull their bed covers back, and eventually reached the point where it would slap the children in the face, pull their hair, and make all kinds of really grotesque sounds. Mm-hmm. Then over time, this thing actually grew and began to talk, and it would curse the family. It would speak of events in the future. It would tell about other people's business and just give them all sorts of problems. And this, of course, in addition to the slapping and everything else that was already going on. And this force just seemed to grow over time, grew over a period of years, actually.
Mm-hmm.
And it got to the point where people would ask this thing what it was and what it was actually there for. And it said that it was there to kill John Bell, who was, the father of the family, and to make sure that John Bell's daughter did not marry her sweetheart. And for those two reasons, this thing took out most of its anger on John Bell and his daughter Betsy. But the rest of the family wasn't completely spared either. They had a lot of problems getting slapped around, made fun of, and all of this. And, of course, by an invisible entity. People could not actually see this thing. They could only hear it and feel it when it would hit them or stab them with pins or throw them to the floor, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And on a few occasions, some apparitions were encountered. The kids would be out playing in the fields or walking to school and would see, like, strange-looking old ladies, strange-looking children, kind of off in the distance, just staring at them, and then they would just suddenly disappear. And there were also reports of seeing rabbits that were overgrown, very large dogs, and that sort of thing. It was just a whole plethora of paranormal activity, most all of which was very malevolent and evil, being directed at this family. And eventually, this thing did break up Betsy and her sweetheart, as well as kill John Bell, allegedly by poisoning him.
Mm-hmm.
Then, after 4 years, this thing just suddenly left and promised to come back in 7 years, which it did. And during that time, it only stayed about 3 or 4 weeks and visited mostly with John Bell's oldest son and told him things about upcoming events like the Civil War, World War I, World War II, the Great Depression, and all of those things. And I think the most intriguing thing about this whole series of disturbances is that many people actually witnessed it, and people such as doctors, lawyers, even preachers actually wrote about this in journals and other information.
Mm-hmm.
And the first book on it came out about almost 75 years after it happened. It came out in 1894. It was written by a man named Ingram, and he included a lot of these written eyewitness accounts in his book. So that's the big thing right there. So many people actually saw this and documented it. Plus, unlike a lot of stories, if you look up the names of the people and places mentioned in the original legend, you can actually find where they did exist.
Mm-hmm.
So that's another thing there. You can actually document the people and places and a lot of these events that happened so long ago.
Pat, I want to hold right there for a second. We're still having an issue with your phone line, okay? So what I want to do, we're going to take a quick break here, and we're going to redo the phone line. I think I know how we can thwart the problem, so to say. We'll take us out to a break here real quick. Pat, hang tight, okay?
Okay.
Because it's popping really bad, and it's killing us here.
It's killing us. It comes right through in our headphones.
It's killing our ears. Our ears are just like, boom, boom, every 2 seconds.
Well, maybe it's the bell witch.
Maybe it is. Hey, she don't want you talking, Pat. We got to fix that. Hang tight, guys.
Please note, this article written by Scott L. of Ghostly Talk in 2003 was intended for satirical and entertainment purposes only within the paranormal community.
Welcome to Scott L.'s Guide to Finding the Right Ghost Hunters and Paranormal Research Group for you.
Hey there, guys. And if you're not guys, that would probably make you girls. So hello, guys and girls. A lot of people ask me, Scott L., how can I get myself into an active ghost hunting group that goes on hunts, does research, and basically be as cool as you? Well, there's a lot to that. There are a lot of things you want to look at and observe before you sign your soul over to the certified nutjob or full-blown crack addict who elected himself president of the club you are pledging yourself to. The best thing to do is go on a ghost hunt with the group you are interested in and see what they are all about, so to say. Here are some things you want to look for. Number 1. As an observer, the first thing you want to note of is the group's leadership. Watch how the self-appointed president treats the other members. Here is what you want to look for in a good leader. A. The group president is in control of everything. No one else can have any delegated job of any significance. This is the president's vision, so no input is needed from anyone. B. Make sure he treats the vice president like complete garbage. Also make sure he treats anyone who helps him out in starting his, quote, business, end quote, like complete garbage. That way you know he takes no garbage, and the group is run like a pirate ship full of transvestites in a hurricane. C. The group president does not put in for gas money. He has all of his money invested in the group's website costs, t-shirts, and borrowed computer from Rent-A-Center to build the group's website anyways. Look for these things and you can be confident that you will be joining a group with flawless leadership and no skeletons to find out about in the future. Number 2. Everything you see and hear is a ghost, without a doubt. You want to belong to a group that has already decided before they put their foot in a cemetery that the afterlife is real. Number 3. Carrying on rule number 2, when you see or hear a ghost, you want to make sure that everyone you are with, including the people driving by the cemetery, know that you saw or heard one. So let them know in the most dramatic way possible. This will convince them that there is a ghost around, and a million flashes will go off at the same time, blinding and killing any forest animals within a 10-mile radius. Number 4. Remember, this is a serious investigation. Things are going to need to be organized and quiet, so bring as many people as possible. You see, if there's a group of 25 people giggling, smoking cigarettes, and talking about how scared they are at the top of their lungs, the ghost will try to be louder to get your attention and possibly manifest themselves as an apparition in front of you. Number 5. Make sure all of the members bring their cell phones with them to call their friends at the keg party they are missing to say, "You won't believe where I'm at right now." Number 6. There is only one kind of flashlight. Million candle illuminators. These are the only thing to use in a place of rest and serenity, such as a cemetery. Remember, if you can't land a helicopter with it, you can't ghost hunt with it. Number 7. Make sure when going out on an adventurous night of ghost hunting that everyone attending drives separately. This way, when the police drive by the cemetery you are investigating at 1 in the morning and see a sight resembling Joe's used car lot, they are assured that the group has assembled to guard the cemetery from evil wrongdoers who wish to come in the cemetery for a night of urinating on, licking, and humping the tombstones located there. If you watch closely for these things while pledging different ghost hunting groups, rest assured, you will find yourself in a world-class investigation unit, worthy of global attention for outstanding documentation and ethics in paranormal investigations. So with that, good luck and good hunting from your friend and probably your boyfriend, Scott L.
Okay, wow, no, that was, hey, you know,
that was too funny. I mean, maybe we had a problem with the phone, but we were able to play that goofy thing for people to listen to. I threw that in because we were talking about this last night out in Grand Haven.
You talked about Scott L's Guide to Ghost
Hunting. They're working on, GLPR is working on a series of guides similar to that, but they wanted to kind of put, they wanted to make it fun too. Well, I said, hey, I'm your man, I got it all written out, right? So I was thinking about that today when I was queuing up the playlist and stuff like that. I decided to throw it in. I'm glad we were able to use it to like fix the problem. Everything seems to sound pretty good. Patty, you
right
there?
Right now.
Yeah.
It sounds awesome now. We have one popping thing yet.
Crystal clear.
About that, listeners. We get that problem here, and we fixed it, though. I think we got it.
I think that's it.
The Jim Bell witch hopping into the lines.
Mm-hmm.
She don't want Pat to talk, but we're not going to let that happen.
Well, you know, when because even though that zipping sound did, you know, it was in there,
yeah.
I still could hear what Pat, I could hear what you were saying.
It was really clear.
One of the things that's interesting is you talked about prophecy, that she prophesied World War One or Two, and she prophesied the Great Depression. She would tell them of this. That would have been in the future, right? So it was prophecy.
Right, yeah, it was in the future. In fact, she also spoke a lot about the Civil War, which, of course, way back then, that was way into the future.
Mm-hmm. That's it. I mean, I never thought about it that way, Doug. I mean, you brought that up, and that's an interesting point, that she was prophesizing.
This was an entity that prophesied, and yeah. And that's not normal, is it? I mean, I don't think
No, not at all. And one really strange thing about this case is that it began like a poltergeist case, just with the noises and things flying around. And that type of entity is not thought of to have any intelligence. But over time, as this thing grew, or perhaps was fueled by other things, it seemed to develop an intelligence.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's kick some science on that, because that really brings up an interesting point. We know, as far as stats go, which how many stats can you really have in this field, but poltergeist cases, they do start out kind of mellow. They start out subtle. They're little things. And it seems over time they build up and build up until to something like the Bell Witch case, for example.
Well, nothing like the Bell Witch case. Even poltergeist cases.
That's like multiplied times like 1,000. Yeah,
well, if you take a poltergeist case and then, you know, it does usually start small and then build up. But
mm-hmm.
then... it usually drops.
And it don't murder people.
And it doesn't kill people or break people up.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, or preach, you know, what's
or
happening
talk,
in one part
drama,
of the town to
you know?
Another part of the town.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, so I don't think that it goes to that extent.
But here's the idea, Pat, and tell me what you think about this. I'm really curious. The Bell Witch, you know, it started out like, you know, I don't want to use typical poltergeist activity because I don't think any of this stuff is typical. But you have these trait characteristics. You have this subtle thing that starts up and starts building up over time. There has to be a reason for that. Why, you know, why it would get more and more intense as it went on. Do you think that may have been, because we know with poltergeist cases that a lot of these, they've seen in studies that poltergeist cases are sometimes the result of psychokinesis with usually young women between the ages of like 15 and like 25 or something like that. Okay. Do you think
the more scared they got, the more freaked out they got about this, that builds up more energy in them. Therefore,
yes.
gives this entity more energy too. Are you following me?
Yeah, certainly. There's a lot of theories out there that state that basically a poltergeist goes in five different stages, and the terror it evokes in one stage causes RSPK, or recurrent spontaneous psychokinesis, on the part of someone, which in turn pushes it up to the next stage,
mm-hmm.
and just, you know, so on and so forth. A lot of studies say that. As for myself, I've really been able to determine whether that was the RSPK was the root cause of the Bellwitch legend or not.
Mm-hmm.
I can't help but think that it caused some of it in terms of this thing growing, because it had to fuel itself off of something.
Exactly.
I mean, at the very first that the people heard of this thing was, of course, rapping on the wall. But then for a while, they complained of hearing these whispers, and they couldn't really discern what these whispers were saying. And as these whispers became more clear over time, they also became louder.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, it's definitely like this thing developed some strength.
Well, and it built up over time.
Did she answer questions, or was it like directed, you know, like, I have something to say and I'm just going to say it, or were they able to talk back and forth with her?
Well, both. And the most interesting thing, I feel, is that when the noises began, some of the neighbors wanted to try to test this thing to see if it possessed any intelligence.
Mm-hmm.
And they would ask questions, and they wouldn't get anything unless the answer to the question involved a number. On one occasion, they wanted to know how many miles to Port Royal, and they heard seven raps on the wall.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, it was 7 miles away.
Mm-hmm.
And then in another case, somebody asked how many horses were outside tied up. And, again, this thing responded with the correct number of raps.
Mm-hmm.
But as it grew stronger over time and could talk, it would actually answer questions, you know, with its voice. Like in one story, there was a man who came over from England to investigate this. And he asked some questions like, what's my family doing in England right now? And it would give an answer. And then subsequently, after he left the United States, he wrote back to the Bells that all these things that it said his family was doing in England, that it was true, that they said they were doing those things on the particular dates and times.
And they were able to verify that.
Right.
Well, that's pretty...
Yeah, that's amazing. But the other thing is, you found out a lot of information, I think, at least that's how I would go about it, reading journals and diaries and things like that. Is that, have you read that kind of stuff?
Oh, lots. Lots of it.
What kinds of things concerned the people back then? I mean, it seems to me like when I write a journal or a diary, it's always fairly boring. You know, I don't have, like, this Hollywood life or anything like that. So it's like, you know, okay, I went to, you know, get gas, and I went and did this, and I went and did that. Did journals and diaries tend to be, back then, pretty much as boring as perhaps mine is? Or did they talk with great feeling and depth about pretty much everything they did? And then how often did the Bell Witch pop up, and how did they treat her as a topic?
Well, the people spoke a lot about, I guess, what you would call anything extraordinary, like visitors coming from out of town, Native American attacks up and down the Red River and the Cumberland River, things like that, but not so much as just their daily lives. I mean, it's not, you know, I wouldn't compare it to, like, Blogger or LiveJournal.com or anything like that. It was more reserved for the very extraordinary things.
So did they tend to do daily entries, or were these more like when something spectacular happened?
Just when something, you know, spectacular out of the ordinary happened.
Okay.
And the Bell Witch was mentioned a number of times in a number of different places, and referred to as everything from Our Family Trouble to the witch. A lot of people used the word witch back then, and I think that was because this was like, you know, barely, you know, less than 100 years after, just barely 100 years after the Salem witch trials up mm-hmm. in the Northeast. So the word witch was used a lot, and some of the things that I read in some people's journals were also things that ended up being stories and books. So there's quite a bit of information about it, and not really so much as to what might have caused this thing, but, you know, more the terror that this thing evoked. And I think the main concern among everybody there at the time was their religion, because it pretty much contradicted what they had been taught and what they believed from a religious standpoint. So they were, in a lot of cases, questioning their own religious beliefs, definitely doing a lot of praying and that sort of thing, and just, you know, trying to piece this thing together, but yet nobody could seem to comprehend it.
Did word of the Bellwitch get, because I know, what time frame were we talking about again? When did this happen?
This was between 1817 and 1821.
Mm. So that was well before the spiritualist movement.
Yeah, pretty much so. There were some other movements, things going on at the time. The Baptist Church was splitting over an issue between Calvinism and Arminianism.
Mm-hmm.
There was also some changes taking place in the Presbyterian Church. So there were a lot of different changes going on. There was also a movement going on called the Second Great Awakening. So yeah, there was a lot of religion going on.
Well, did word of this get... Obviously, word got around, because I've read stories and it is believed that even Andrew Jackson had you know, come into town over these events, and I think that's just believed, right? That's not actually proven, or is it proven now?
Okay, it's believed by some. What I was able to find in the Andrew Jackson case is that he did in fact own land nearby. Even though he lived in Nashville, he did visit the area some, and mention is made of that fact. In fact, in one place, even the John Bell name in Robertson County was mentioned. However, I found nowhere where there was any mention made of anything, you know, strange or out of the ordinary happening up in that area. Nothing that Andrew Jackson wrote about.
Well, that's interesting, because
you've
obviously read the internet, and they say that he breezed into town and he was determined to, you know, prove it a hoax of some kind, and then ended up leaving in the middle of the night.
Right. That's a very popular story.
Okay.
In fact, it's even in my books too.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, I make it a point to mention that is just the legend. Or that is the legend part, that there's no actual proof that he encountered the Bell Witch, so to speak.
Okay.
We can prove that he was in the area and that he did visit the Bells, but he made no mention of the Bell Witch in his own writings. But then again, an aspiring politician and military general, if he did, people would think he was crazy or something. So that's not to say he didn't experience it, but he certainly did not write about it.
Right. I don't blame him. not if he wanted to become president eventually.
Yeah. That's
not, and somebody, yeah. Somebody reported that he later told some people that he would rather fight the British Army than to deal with the Bell Witch.
Well, he undoubtedly had heard of the stories because he, you know, I mean, if he had land in the area and would visit the area because of that, he'd undoubtedly heard of the stories. So, unless he disbelieved the people, you know, because to have somebody back then, there was no internet. You wouldn't just dash off an email, "Oh yeah, I'm having a, you know, this disembodied voice is terrorizing me."
Yeah.
You know, you didn't just dash it off and to, you know, millions of people at once. Word would have to spread in sitting rooms and in saloons and at card mm-hmm. parties and things like that.
And finally get ultimately this gentleman, Andrew Jackson.
Right, and get around the country. Mm-hmm. I mean, was it widespread throughout the country? Was there any writings of it in any publications?
Okay, that's the very strange thing about it, as even though I found writings about it long beforehand, the first commercially published piece of information was an article in the 1849 to 1853 time frame in the Saturday Evening Post, and that was the first one.
Well, that's a pretty big commercial first debut.
Right, but what's so odd is that so many of the personal accounts talk about so many people coming to, you know, listen to all these voices and everything, people coming from all over the country, yet 1849, 1850, that's roughly 29, 30 years after all of this stuff stopped.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of weird to me, because I would think that any reporter who heard about this would have to, you know, visited the homestead to hear this and, you know, write about it back then and not, you know, wait 29, 30 years.
Well, that would have been a generation, right? I mean,
about
a generation.
Yeah.
So, excuse me, so children growing up in the area, perhaps it had heard their parents talking about it or what have you, and then now they're, you know, adults and working, you know, and spreading the word of what, you know, because that's what you did. You visited
then. You talked.
You talked.
You told stories.
You tell stories of yourself and where you're from and what you're going to do and the people you met and things like that. So, mm-hmm. I mean, because you just had to talk then.
There was no internet.
There was no internet. So what happens is they, you know, now these are adults, but this would have been the children's age and, you know, the children growing up. So it wasn't exactly legend at that point. It's not like you couldn't say, you know, well, you know, my mom's still down there and she remembers it, you know, let's go talk to her.
Yeah.
This was one within that generation. So that's what's confusing.
It is.
Why did it stay silent in the national press or in any commercial press, even local press?